Okay, good evening, and welcome to the regular meeting of the Oceano Community Services District for Wednesday, July 24th. We have a roll call, please.
Director Gibson.
Here.
Director Villa.
Here.
Director Apollo.
Here.
Vice President White.
Here.
President Austin.
Here. Y'all please join me in the flag.
Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Brings us to agenda review. Is there any?
I have nothing.
We're going to leave the agenda as is till we all approve the agenda. Do we need a motion for that?
I make a motion we approve the agenda.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. We go into closed session. Let's break. Okay, so we will be at closed session.
He needs to read off the. Yeah, right.
Would you like to read?
All right. The board will adjourn to closed session for items 5A, B, and C. A being Government Code 54957.6A, conference with labor negotiators. Item B, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, this is a conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus the City of Santa Maria et al. Item 5C, public employment. Government Code 54957B1 in regards to the position of the general manager.
And then if I just might point out real quick for the members of the public who are here today, maybe we should have put it in bigger letters, but in the middle of the agenda where it says public comment on matters not on the agenda, which is, it says, so tonight it's not beginning before 6:30 because we're anticipating we're going to be in closed session until 6:30. So the meeting technically starts at 6, which we have to publish, but that's kind of the hint for individuals who might want to come to the meeting.
Well, you have to read.
I said that we could put it in bigger print for you, Jim.
So is that technically an agenda change?
No. That's already what's disclosed. And the point being is we're anticipating we're going to be in closed session for about a half hour. So. Too bad we didn't have, like, little movie
so
clips we could play on
the wall. So do we have any public comment on the closed session before we adjourn? Seeing none. Okay, we will adjourn and be back by 6:30. Thank you.
We're not adjourning.
Well, not where we're going to close this. 'm going to call the meeting back to order. And could we have a report of our closed session, please?
We have no reportable action.
Thank you. We'll move on to public comment for items that are not on the agenda. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board in matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not on the agenda?
Hello, board. I haven't met some of you yet. My name's Rebecca Ventrini. I'm here today to talk. I heard that you have a beautification project maybe happening with the firehouse, and I wanted to just hear a little bit more about that and talk about helping you out with that.
We'll be talking about that when we give our reports.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. And also, you have the postcards there. My husband and I designed the Oceano and Napomo window for the Showcase of Cities at the Mid-State Fair last year and won first place. We did it again this year, and we're currently in third place. So please vote.
Need a vote. Go on.
Yeah. Paso's first, and they are a contender. But Templeton is ahead of us, and they are not a contender. So we at least have to beat Templeton. They did not park the amount of work that we put in ours, but Paso did some.
Well, how do we vote?
There's a link that I can send. I'm not sure
survey
who I can send it to. It's
I
a survey.
It on Facebook.
Oh, great.
Sharing it, and a lot of people have shared it.
Yeah,
so
keep sharing.
Just get everybody to share it on Facebook.
And you might be able to vote from different email addresses and different computers. You can also vote in person, too. So.
Yeah.
Vote as much. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to bring... I'll wait till we...
Mary Lucy O'Shano, I know what you're up to, Mr. Ogren. He's going to get on there and vote for Templeton.
No.
Mary Lucy O'Shano, I would like to ask the board to revisit the sewer bills that we get, that we don't get, that are attached to our tax bills from the sanitation district, since the rep from this body sits on that body. If you might reconsider discussing it, bringing it back up on your agenda. Our other two partner organizations, they get their bills sent to their houses, where Oceano, they sent ours to our tax rolls. So it is a hardship. You know, some of us can pay the $29 every other month, and but to come up with the $350, $400 during tax time is just another hardship on us. So I'm asking if your board will please, you know, go back and revisit that and see if we can change that and make things, you know, fair and equitable like partners are supposed to do. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else have public comment? Okay, seeing none, we will...
Oh, can I ask a question about the way the sewer bills are paid? Is that something...
I was going to give a report on that when I give the sanitation.
Oh, okay.
And we'll talk. Thank you. Is there any staff reports? Field Supervisor Tony Marchino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Marchino. So as for the drainage project... Ramita had a change order on there because we were there were missing three 12-inch valves to be able to isolate while they did the drainage and then retie in the water mains. Change order was $35,000, roughly. So myself and the crew were going to end up doing that job there for the three valves, the installation of them, and the parts and materials are going to be about $9,000. Cost to the district instead of the $35,000. Is there anything else you want to add on that?
Where is this actually? Is it right here in the highway or is it up?
It's actually, we're going to have three valves that are going to be all on Paso.
Paso Robles Street?
Paso Robles Street. But you got one valve on the east side of 15th and Paso, one on the west side of 15th and Paso, and the third isolation valve is going to be right where the gas station's at. So the Highway 1 relocation can be done there also. And what this does, it gives the ability to the customers that they'll have water while they're doing the drainage project, and there's no rush for them to get it installed. Everything else is being backfed.
So to follow up the... Normally, if we have a pipe or some other type of project, the idea is water is shut, not shut off to any customers for more than 8 hours. So basically a day that they're working. The relocation of the pipe, the 12-inch line in Highway 1, though, without these isolation valves, would require a service shut off for a couple days, right? So we can't do that. So we need to get those isolation valves in. Our ability to have Tony do the work is because when we got our bids in, I should say, when we went out to bid for this utility relocation work, we got no bids. And your board adopted Resolution 2019-02 then that allows us to procure the work at, you know, great flexibility. So most of that work is being accomplished through the contract with the county and the county's contractor. But we have the ability to do portions of the work with our own force account. And because our crews or our time is already covered in the budget, our additional cost is simply the cost of the materials, which is around $9,000. But if we use the county's contractor, then our additional cost is the same material cost. In fact, we got the quotes from the same, you know, company. It's exact same material cost. But we'd be paying a lot more, you know, out of pocket for labor for the county's crews. And because our crews are capable of doing that type of work, that's why Tony's going to be proceeding with it.
Okay.
Yes. And for an update on well four, it got videoed. It's going to need to get brushed, the casing, just because of the material, the buildup. And we had an estimate on that.
We're going to cover that a little bit more.
And then the actual motor is taken down to get it inspected and see if it needs to get rebuilt. Since we are going to be putting a new well in there, you know, that's definitely something to look at. And as for well 8, the motor, we're going to be picking that up tomorrow. And then I'll lock down a time frame for the contractor to remove the one that did blow up and reinstall the same day. I'll find out here shortly about that, but we are picking up the motor that got rebuilt for well 8. And then as for the past couple weeks, we've had the weekly, monthly samples, 8 work orders, 13 USAs, 5 customer service calls, 1 after-hours call-out. That was due to a turn-on to a line that had broke on the customer side. We had to repair a line on North Swing due to a leak. We had meter reads, after meter reads, re-reads, leak notifications to customers. We had a service line on 20th that we had to repair on our side. Tamara on 23rd had a service line that got hit by a contractor. We go out in USA and it was actually on us. When it got installed, it was about 20 feet down the main and it shot at an angle. And there was no trace wire, no way for us to really identify exactly where it was. So the guys in the field did mark where any one of us would have and it got hit. It's probably about 3 feet off. Got that repaired. I've seen that probably 5 times in our system where it's not where it should be and there's no way for us to trace it. It is what it is. As we install these new service lines, we do put trace wire to locate it.
And trace wires are?
It's basically just you can run an electric current and you can identify where it's at on the water lines and water mains when they get installed. Changed out a 4-inch meter at the an RV park. We attended a drought preparedness class yesterday. We had a leak detection class here today. And the fog program is all on the district now. We're not relying on any other outside agencies. Any questions?
I'm good. Anybody have any questions?
I have one. The follow-up on, so our Pier Avenue hydrant now has been hit 6 times.
Yes, it has. And
and it's been installed 18 months ago or something like that. Did you have any?
Yes, I had a phone call with the property owner regarding that location. And as soon as he gets back off of vacation in about 2 weeks, we're going to meet at that location to install ballards on their property. And there will be email and pictures taken that allows us to put ballards to protect from that side. That's where it's getting hit from, is from the private property side.
And whether they just give us permission or whether they, if they expect, you know, us to indemnify them or insure them or do anything else like that, then that will require some sort of board action versus if they just give us permission. So we might have some follow-up on that.
Okay. So hopefully here in the next couple weeks we'll meet with the property owner.
Anybody else have any questions for Tony?
Yeah, I just had a comment. I'd like to, you know, commend our crew for all this self-performing. You know, it started with little things, and then we self-performed at the big air park bridge, and now we're beginning to self-perform on major valves and stuff, and it just...
And you did that line replacement. Was it over on Laguna?
Yes.
Yeah, well, they didn't quite self-perform that one, but...
Oh, the one that went underneath
the...
Water
line under the lagoon? I thought you guys...
It wasn't completely us. There was contractors involved because of the boring equipment.
Well, you were there.
But it's
We did some prep work for the pits and where it gets tied in at.
It's just... I'm just commendable, all the really, really fine work they're doing that's, you know, makes me proud of them.
Yes, very.
They can wear their water department T-shirts.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. There's nobody here from the fire. General Manager, Mr. Ogren, do you have a report?
Yeah, a few items to cover. Today, Nicole and I met with Seth Stevens with Canon and the representative from Lucio Mar Unified School District regarding the LID project on Oceano Elementary School.
Can you say what that is, the LID?
Low impact development.
Okay.
In order to do the subsurface percolation basins underneath the ball field. He indicated that his initial discussions with others at Lucio Mar has been positive. And so Seth is going to find out with Darla, who was also at your meeting last, what is it that we need from Lucio Mar in order to submit the grant application? And if required for the board of, I don't know what we call Lucio Mar's board of directors or...
Board of Trustees.
CMR, Board of Trustees.
Trustees. Yeah. That if they need to take action, that we're going to be targeting their September meetings. So, again, forward progress on that. Met with Director Gibson at the State Water Contractors meeting today, but I'll let her speak to that and follow up if I have some additional notes. Carrie and I have been working on the draft FAQs for a county and gotten some input from different board members. I was hoping to have that as part of the agenda package today, but we just didn't, you know, have the time to do that. So we'll have those drafts of what we've developed so far for the next meeting. And on construction contracts, obviously the emergency generator project is 9B today. But we had a few hiccups in those documents, both in going out to bid as well as just compiling it. Nothing that seems to be really anything significant in terms of the construction contract, but efficiency and process and some things. So we've gone through and created what I call bid slash construction document diagram. Because all of the documents that we have to go out to bid, and then a lot of those documents get incorporated in the construction contract by reference, there's literally like dozens of different documents that can roll into this. And so in order, Nicole, Carrie, and I sat down in order to get that all coordinated, and we'll be working with Jeff as well, anticipating some revisions that we need to make in those documents. And I mention it because we've got to get the bids out for the North Swing Pershing Waterline Replacement Project. So we've been working on our construction and bidding documents and get better organized there. The approach there also is with all the details that go into that, and since I kind of compiled everything, I created something here at the district that didn't previously exist. Well, as a first-generation work product, we're looking at it and we're saying, okay, well, good for first pass. How do we want to improve that and make it better? And as well as how do we then take different documents and assign responsibilities to different people so that it's not all the GM. You know, again, spread the work amongst many different people. So it's moving forward with both looking at the documents itself, making improvements, as well as making sure that there's different assignment of responsibilities of staff for the different components of the construction contracts. Because when we share in those responsibilities, our timeliness will improve. And I am concerned about timeliness right now. And then also working with Nicole on the closeout for the local hazard mitigation plan grant. And I'm sure there's other things, but glad to answer any questions.
Okay, does anyone have any questions for
you?
No.
Yeah, I have a question. Back on June 12th, I think in the context of a discussion about sea level rise, you said in the next few weeks the lift station would be evaluated. Has that happened?
So, Tony, you did do a tour. WSC came out there with you, right?
Yes, WSC was out there with two interns, employees.
What's
yes.
WSC?
Water Systems Consultants.
Yes. We met out there. I met with them, and we went over a design for a lift station for that location. And they're currently working on it.
So, and I think they were going to develop a proposal for us, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I can follow up with Dan Heimel, who's their lead, and find out where that... I know he's been... he's a big backpacker and everything, so he's been taking off time this summer, so he's been kind of hit and miss, and I would guess that's why we don't have the proposal yet. But
yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, is that... All right, thank you, Mr. Ogren. Now we will go to Board of Directors and outside committees. Director Villa?
No.
Nothing. Director Gibson?
Yes, thank you. I attended the Zone 3 water meeting, and one of the things we followed up on was our approval of the cloud seeding, and that goes before the Board of Supervisors on the consent agenda on August 13th. And then we spent a lot of time discussing the mandatory PG&E power shutdowns that could come. And we could ask PG&E to come and give a presentation too, possibly. Anyway, they're talking about the entire county could be out of power from 1 to 3 days. The triggers for the power outages could be high winds, low humidity, dry fuel, and then they do a lot of modeling of weather patterns. So Zone 3 is hoping to have eight hours to 48 hours notice, and then they Lopez will be able to deliver water for 5 days. So, and then I attended the State Water Subcontractors Advisory Committee, and we mainly discussed the Delta Tunnel project. It originally was two tunnels. Now it has been changed to one tunnel, and it's still in the planning phase, and I'd like General Manager to continue.
So with the single tunnel project, what we were informed at the State Water Contractors meeting today is that there is going to be an upcoming decision, which is really rests with the Board of Supervisors, but input from all of the subcontractors will be important. Our contract with the county just still recognizes that the county is the contracting agency with the state of California, and any amendments that they do are automatically incorporated by reference into our agreement. So the county, and the issue here is that out of all the state water contractors, of which there's like 29, including LA, Kern County, who have 75% of the project, and then the rest of us, it appears that it's going to be a discretionary decision on whether to opt into the tunnel project. The idea being is that if you opt into the tunnel project, then you increase the reliability of your state water deliveries. Discussion ensued today is, well, if we have drought buffer, why do we need to opt into the project? Because we have, you know, good reliability. There's some other issues about storage and whatnot that will also play into the discussion. But an interesting concept that came up was, how much is it going to cost? And the estimate was, you know, we're back of the envelope, $250 an acre foot. Well, coincidentally, if all of the state water contractors were to buy out the rest of the county's excess entitlement, that might also be about $250 an acre foot. So there could be a dynamic that's unique to San Luis Obispo County, and it's a little bit hard to predict how it might play out. But in one sense, the county goes, we're going to opt in, and if you all don't like it, then just buy out the rest of our excess entitlement. There was no implication on the county staff that they would take that position. But it creates the interesting dynamic because if all the state water contractors buy up the rest of the excess entitlement, then essentially it's the state water subcontractors like Oceano that then could decide what to do with that excess allocation and have more of a control and offset some of those costs potentially. So it's going to be a big decision that's coming up in the near future. My biggest concern is that is the county going to give us adequate time in order to talk through the details, you know, not just here in Oceano, Pismo Beach, Morro Bay, you know, in the other communities. But it was definitely a good discussion today, but it was a little bit of the tip of the iceberg. So as it develops, we can anticipate that we'll have some items on your board agenda in the future. You had mentioned on Lopez. Carrie's going to cover 9B a little bit, and since we have a generator, we're going to follow up a little bit on PG&E's you know, potential blackouts or whatever as well during 9B.
So regarding the cloud seeding, is this body going to have any input to that going forward, or is it, you know, it's with the county supervisors and...
It's already gone forward.
Yeah, so
I believe last year we talked about it maybe in the context of budget for Zone 3, but...
That's right. So we provided input into Zone 3, and then Zone 3 makes their decisions, and they ended up recommending to the board supervisors to set it up so that they have the option to do clouded seeding. And then as a result of that, the county did a negative deck?
I think so.
Yeah. It's not certain that the Board of Supervisors is going to support it. There had been a number of questions at the Board of Supervisors.
Yes, yeah.
So I think just like your board, there has been some divided opinions on that, you know, at every step. And, you know, still ultimately it's the Board of Supervisors' call. And my understanding is that there's some divided opinions at the Board of Supervisors as well. So kind of right now we're in a wait and see.
At Zone 3 it was a unanimous decision.
Okay. Okay. Is that all for Mr. Ogrup? Or, sure, Ms. Director Gibson. Thank you. Director Rapogal.
Yes, I attended the Oceano Advisory Council meeting, and there were a couple of referrals that we discussed. One was for the former Oceana Casino location. They have applied for a permit to put up a shell building in that location, which is basically an empty building that if somebody comes in and wants to have a restaurant or a shop or something, it can be reconfigured on the inside, but instead of the kind of eyesore that's there now, it would be a structure that would look nice on our main street. So we're hoping that goes forward. Another one was for the county putting up no trespassing signs again on the AG Creek levee, and that was a bit controversial with people thinking that the community's been walking on that levee for a long time, accessing the beach, and should be allowed to continue to do so, and other people arguing it's private property. So we'll see what happens with that. This was for three of the signs on the levee. Two that are in the coastal zone closest to the beach have to get Coastal Commission permission, Coastal Commission permits. So that's TBD. And then we also talked a little bit about the ODSVRA and the Coastal Commission meeting a few weeks ago. And I believe at the next meeting, Charles is going to bring back a resolution, propose a resolution to the council supporting staff recommendations on that. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Well, I know what I want to say on that. With the Oceana, with the new building going in, I was at the post office and the owner of the property there was there, and they're going to be repainting and fixing up the post office building. So it's going to be another improvement. It's going to look really nice. So, Vice President White.
Well, I'll first report on the Five Cities Fire Authority. The really good news is that they thought it might take till August or September, but we have there has been an offer proposal. Well, they've hired three new firefighters. Two of them, Jeff Lane, has been with Five Cities Fire since 2007, and Joe Rawson joined Five Cities Fire in 2018 and is also with Morro Bay, and they're on board already. The third offer went to Aaron Hunt, who is a reserve firefighter paramedic with Cambria and is also in the Air Force and has been in Afghanistan and has trauma training and lives in Grover Beach. And he's just, they have to complete his background in physical and stuff, but he's also been offered a job. But two of the three are already on, and it's kind of nice. I'm sure our fire department didn't have to go, but we had a wildland fire at 420 today at Highway 101 in the Santa Maria River Bridge. It also involved, it was from the Santa Maria, from 101 to 166, and it was made a really big mess with lots of smoke, but I'm just saying summer is here and everything is burning. The other thing from the fire department, and I don't know too much about this, but a Pulse Point app has been launched for all of County Fire, including the Five Cities Fire Authority. And you download an application named Pulse Point Response, select San Luis County Fire Department, and you can monitor with a smartphone all the dispatch information. And one of the reasons for that is this is a proposal that if somebody, for instance, has CPR training, first aid training, and you can hear that your next door neighbor two doors down has just had a heart attack, you also can respond to help. And it's kind of an interesting thing. I tried to get it on my home computer. It does get on home computer, but not with this operator. So if you just go to Pulse Point, that's CAP, P-U-L-S-E, CAP, P-O-I-N-T, and I'm sure you can find out a lot more from also County Fire or from anybody else who understands this thing better than I do.
And I saw an email come through from Chief Lieberman on that.
I hadn't
had a chance to study it, but I'll make sure to forward it on to all board members.
Okay.
And also we can have Nicole get it on the district website.
Yeah. And we need to know that Five Cities Fire Authority prefixes begin with 66, and then they've got like 6600 would be the fire chief, and 6611 would be battalion chief, 6612 would be battalion chief, and then different trucks all have different numbers. And I'm sure we can make that available so that you hear the siren and you have instant ability to know what the fire department is doing. I think it's pretty special. Yes. Anyway, and that's from the fire department. Also was at Zone 11A, where they were discussing the signs that go up. And also, she just reported on that, but we also, and if I'd look at the right paperwork, they're also going to be starting the first 8 grading sites on the Rio Grande Creek cleanup project. They start September 17th and they go to October 31st on the first 8. There will be 22 altogether, and the rest of them will be done next year. And they're starting at the Santa Maria at the Highway 22nd Street Bridge and going west. So, and what it'll be will be they will be cleaning out the accumulated between the levee, the insides of the levee and the stream bed, and they will not be digging the actual stream bed. And in certain points, they're going to be putting in, what do they call them?
Those logs.
Big log structures for erosion control. So in certain places, logs will, and it also benefits, it's got some environmental benefits for fish and wildlife too. So anyway, so it's going to be interesting. And they expect to remove 25,000 cubic yards of dirt from Rio Grande Creek levee. So anyway.
Do you know where they're taking all that dirt?
All that dirt has to be removed from the site and totally removed from the area so that the next rain won't wash it all back in. And I think they're...
Yeah, I don't know where they'll be disposing of it, but today under EIRs, I would anticipate that their disposal locations are identified in the EIR as well.
Yeah. They're stockpiling a lot of it behind a RAP, Keith, RAP property. Yeah. And people did request, they offered land and said, could you leave it there? And they were told that it cannot be left beside the river levee. It has to be taken away. So, but it, yeah, and I don't know. They indicated in an earlier thing that was not particularly contaminated. It would not be considered contaminated dirt. It just has to be taken away from the creek. Yeah.
Yeah, I would expect that to be the case as well. And whether the county, 25,000 cubic yards is a lot, I'm trying to create some sort of reference on it. whether they take it into county road yards in order to reuse it, I'm not sure as well. So.
Just as long as it doesn't run back into the creek.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Any questions? Oh, I'll go on to my report. So I'll start with the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. And first off, I think I reported last time that there were negotiations with the trade unions to do a project labor agreement with the sanitation district, and that agreement came before the board and it was approved. And so now they're just working on the contracts to get that in place. And we also had the tax roll billing. I think there was public comment earlier. And I don't know if you're familiar, but I do have this little notebook that was put together where back in 2015, it started where the sanitation district did not pay our invoices for it. We were billing $11,000 for each semi-annual, $22,000 a year. So it ended up with redoing the whole billing agreement where Arroyo Grande and Grover continued to be billed by the sanitation district. Oceano's billing was put onto the property tax rolls, and every year we have to approve that to keep going forward, so it was on the agenda and it was approved for this year. However, we've brought it up that we would like to revisit it and see about Oceano taking on the billing again. So sanitation district is willing to talk to Oceano, and I would like to see if the board would want to give direction or if we could put it on, if this should be a future agenda item for us to discuss. I don't know if you have any comments on that.
Just for clarification, so at the sanitation district meeting, the board either agreed or gave informal or some sort of direction.
It was informal, given that we would, the sanitation district would
reconsider. Okay. Because where it was left is, I guess in 2015, the board gave staff direction, and Jeff had, you know, legal counsel had worked on an agreement with the San district. That existing direction still is valid. That Oceano, was willing to continue to do the billing. And it was the sanitation district that chose not to have us continue to do billing. And so the existing board direction, you know, already provides me with the opportunity to sit down with Jeremy and talk about it. I think the critical thing was that the sanitation district board gave him the informal direction to reconsider what the San district's position was. So I don't need any new direction from your board, and I can report back after, you know, discussing with Jeremy and finding out if the sanitation district might.
I know there was other public comment from Oceano residents that would prefer the billing coming out on your OCSD bill, like it was done, because it's like a big chunk on your property taxes. And then tenants who pay the water bill, were always paying that. And then some of the property owners don't like having that back on their taxes. So it's something that I think should.
Yeah, so I'll reach out to Jeremy. You know, again, we have an existing board position that, you know, supports continuing billing. And perhaps some of the, you know, controversies of 2015 are gone now that the San District Board has essentially changed. Point of clarification is that since bills on property tax bills are on an annual basis, if the Oceano were to resume billing on behalf of the sanitation district, the soonest it would be after July 1 of 2020.
Right. Okay.
I'm sorry, can you clarify that history again? So Oceano didn't pay the bills?
What happened was,
didn't pass it on?
Okay, we had a sanitation board, and the people that were on the board and working at the plant, they decided not to pay the billing service for the invoices.
Maybe I could clarify.
Can you clarify?
So it was the sanitation district
didn't.
That did not pay our semi-annual invoice in 2015. There's a little bit of a backstory on that, but I think, you know, at this point in time, we probably are limited in our discussions since this is a committee report. But in any case, the sanitation district didn't pay, and then we went through a bunch of steps. We didn't bill for one billing period, and so then they came around, they agreed to bill, I mean, agreed to pay, and then we did billing for a couple more billing periods, and then they basically took over the billing themselves. Some of the history is that there was differences in how much the Sand District was compensating Oceano versus how much they were compensating Grover and Arroyo Grande. Mm. The Sanitation District bill took a position that they were going to increase compensation to Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach and decrease compensation to Oceano. They had an alternative formula where they could have just kept us neutral and then paid, you know, created parity with Arroyo Grande and Grover. But they chose to take an approach where they were going to reduce how much they're going to pay us. And essentially that was not acceptable to the board and not consider. The offer that legal counsel had put together was just to continue to pay us the amounts that they had previously been paying us.
Been paying for several, well,
for the prior year.
And decided they didn't want to pay.
And there's a little bit of nasty grams associated with stuff too, so. Anyways, that's history. I'll talk to Jeremy, see what their position is.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And then I have a report on the ad hoc committee on our firehouse mural. So we met again last week, and we put together our call for artists, the draft, and we have turned it into Nicole here at the office, and so she's going to get it all polished up, and then I think it'll be here for our August 24th meeting, the draft of the invitation that would be going out to the artist would become before our board. I think that's where we have it set. And then I think our meeting on the 24th, we were going to have the draft for the board to approve.
Okay, so my understanding of our general goals was to make sure to have it all lined up so that we're ready to do murals, you know, once we get through the rainy season.
Right.
Because all of the preparatory and legwork and stuff was hard to imagine getting everything done before the rainy season. In terms of between now and then, I'm seeking a little bit of flexibility on specific board dates within that overall goal.
Just so a little bit of a timeline then. And so, okay, so, yeah, I had those little dates here, but what you said was what we were doing, get through the rainy season and then have it. So all during this fall, and then we'll be working on it. So, and okay. So it's at the office now. And then talking about art, I brought these postcards. This is a report, another report on the Oceano Nipomo Tourism Board.
Okay, so go ahead. No, I just remember there was a member of the public who was going to provide comments too, but I guess that's as soon as all your committee reports are done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to do. So we do have the Oceano Nipomo Tourism Board participated in the Window Showcase of Cities at the Mid-State Fair last year. And so a local Oceano artist and her husband did a window for us, and this is a postcard we had made of the last year's window, and it won the People's Choice Award out of the 11 cities and communities make these windows showcasing their towns, and ours is Oceano Nipomo, so it shows our exploring the roots of the Central Coast, which is Oceano Nipomo, and it has a lot of our buildings and things here. So we have a window in this year's fair. And if you go online to visit Oceano Nipomo or just somewhere online, you can find where they're voting. So you can vote for our window again. It's really, really pretty. I don't have any pictures of it here, but I think if I'm done with this report, then I'll open up public comment for the Board of Directors and outside committee reports. Did you have any?
Sure.
So you have funding for the mural and everything all worked out?
We're working on that, yeah.
Okay, because we received a grant through the Oceano Beach Community Association, and we could add it to. So what we're trying to, what we want to do is create a self-guided art tour through Oceano and create some more artwork for that tour, so including the artwork that's currently here plus new work. And I would love the whatever ends up happening with the firehouse to be a part of that tour as well. And we can allocate a $500 stipend towards that if we want to work together. We're also trying to find paint donations and obviously volunteer hands to paint and when the time comes. And I've put together our call for artists as well. We just have to vote on it and make sure everything's complete in there. So I don't know if you're interested in partnering a little bit or if you need our money or not. It's no big deal either way.
Sounds like
a common goal that we're working towards. So.
How does that work, though, when we're...
We can meet, and I think it's a good idea because coordinating efforts, trying to see how what your board envisions for the old firehouse might fit into, you know, bigger community efforts is always a good idea. Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention that I'm starting vacation tomorrow until August 7th, so we can probably schedule something for when I get back.
Okay.
Would they come to an ad hoc committee meeting?
Is that
what we do?
Okay.
Then that's
great. So what was your name again?
Rebecca.
It's
Venturini.
Venturini.
Yes.
And...
It's on the postcard she did.
Oh, yeah.
Her little name.
Very good. Thank you.
Got it. And then I have pictures of this year's mural if you want me to pass it around.
Sure.
Of the window, I'm sorry. Not the...
Well, they're on your phone?
They're on my phone?
Generally speaking, if we're sharing public information, they have to be documents that we can keep
and
stuff. But when we get together, we can figure out how to print some of those off.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, for us.
This is for the Paso display.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
Hey, Mary Lucy Oceano. Two things. As you're going back through the mess from the Sand District and the billing of OCSD, OCSD, the rep, voted against going to the tax bills, and so I want that recorded in the record that at the time, and the reason why we were opposed to going with the contract was because fiscally it was irresponsible to flip over a napkin and just scribble out some numbers and say this is what we want you to take or to pay, and of course it made no sense, and that's why we voted against it. Secondly, is on the art project, which I think is a great idea. Is that going out to RFP? Yes. Is there, so can we go to the website? We can see an RFP deadlines.
Right now.
So has that already been approved?
No. What we're doing is we're doing our request. It's going to Nicole. Nicole's working on it.
And then it'll be advertised just like we would go out to bid for like a water line or something like that.
Yeah, it'll be back on the board's agenda for approval prior to releasing it.
Okay, and is there some way that the community will, can you just keep in mind, maybe having all the pieces in one place for an hour and the community can come through and say, yeah, I like this one, I don't like, or this one, or is that too complicated?
We haven't got there yet.
It's always process when you include us,
Yeah, that's a good point for discussion when it's back on the board's agenda.
Yeah, just maybe have the pieces up and, definitely attach it to a meeting,
Thank you. Okay, so... That was public comment on the report, so I think we'll move on then to our next item, which is the consent agenda. Do we have some correction here on the checks?
No corrections on the check. It was simply that in your check register on items more than $1,000, we've added the notes on what those payments were for, and there's copies on the table for the public as well.
Okay, so we have the minutes for July 10th, special meeting, regular meeting, cash disbursements, submittal of the district's fiscal year quarter four treasury report, providing free disposal of the 5 bulky items for residents during the September cleanup. And we want to approval the recommendations authorizing the general manager to prepare an amended scope of work and schedule with Canon for the preparation of the Water Resource Reliability Program. So is there any item that anyone wants to pull from the agenda?
I have just a couple questions on 8E, but I don't think we need to pull it.
On 8D?
8E.
8E? Okay. You just want to ask a question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So this is on the cleanup event. There's a statement in the staff report that says that cleanup helps reduce the illegal dumping that occurs in the community. Do we have data on that? Like, do we see a drop after the cleanup event, or could we get data?
I'm not sure if it's illegal dumping that we see, but we definitely see a difference between how many people sign up for the bulky items between the April one when they are paying for it, customers, and then when we're covering up to 5 items, there's always a big increase to seeing participation. And so we assume that people are cleaning out their homes and are less likely to leave it elsewhere.
I guess the statement would probably be more accurate to say that we generally believe. The discussion that we've had with South County Sanitary about, you know, cleanup weeks and illegal dumping, one of the communities they actually point to is San Luis Obispo, because when students are done at the end of the year, things get thrown everywhere, right? So the idea that we're providing the free cleanup in Oceano in the fall event reduces the likelihood or the risk of the illegal dumping, but we don't really have the statistics other than anecdotal statements from, you know, the garbage company.
Okay. And then the other thing was, I was wondering, I guess the garbage company puts out this flyer for cleanup week. I was wondering if we could have somebody copy edit that, because there's some things that are just badly worded and not very clear. And if we could replace large items requiring 2 men with large items requiring 2 people, that would be
so
nice as
offline,
well.
You know, outside of the board, because, you know, obviously this agenda item isn't, but we do definitely have the ability to give them feedback on their flyers. I think there's a technical provision within the franchise agreement itself where we could dictate changes. I think if we could just, you know, separate maybe tomorrow or something, go through some of your suggestions, and then we'll make sure to get them to the garbage company.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, and this would be what's going into their garbage bills. We were planning on doing within our bill, a notification if your board pursues this, that we would cover the first 5 to notify customers that they have the ability to call the garbage company and have 5 items taken for free. So this is what's going into their garbage bill, and we were thinking.
Yeah, and I don't know what the timing is, but again, we have the ability to direct them on some of their flyers and stuff, public information.
That too.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. So is there any public comment on the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
We have a motion to approve this consent agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Can we get a roll call, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Apollo?
Yes.
President Alston?
Yes. Okay, we'll move to business items. We have public comment on each one separate, right?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate.
Okay, so first off, we'll do 9A, the update on the emergency actions approved on July.
So, Madam President, members of the board, and members of the public, agenda item 9A, which is an update on our emergency actions, is an update that's required under the Public Contracts Code. because once your board declared the emergency at the last meeting, we're required to give you an update on each of your regular meetings, and for the emergency to continue, your board is required by a 4/5 vote that there is a need to continue with the emergency actions. So that need continues because, again, well number 8 and well number 4 are continuing to be out of service. Tony mentioned during his operations report a number of the steps that he has been moving forward on. One of them is having well number 4 inspected and camered, and the determination has come up that we do believe that that could be rehabilitated. A couple years ago, we were working on well number 5, and after we did the camera work, it was determined that that well could not be rehabilitated. It had essentially collapsed, and as a result, we sealed it up and we closed off that well. But well 4 can, and we have an estimate of about $24,000. To rebuild the motor right now, the motor didn't fail. It's the pumps and the bowls down in the well that had failed. But the motor hasn't been rebuilt, so he is getting an estimate on rewinding that motor since it's up and we've got the well open. Basically, it's like a maintenance in advance of it failing. We do have the quote, and Carrie, did we issue the purchase order on rewinding the motor that we pulled out of 8? Okay, so we've issued that. That's being done right now. That's right, because that has to get done so that it's ready to be installed when the contractor comes out to take out the existing motor on well number 8. And we had a good price on that for $1,200. So there's a summary of the costs that we have so far with the one item for rebuilding well number 4's motor still pending, but it should be well underneath the price for well number 8, which is $5,600. So again, multiple efforts going on with both well number 4 and well number 8. And we'd be glad to answer any questions.
Anyone have any questions?
How is this looking with our budget?
Well, budget was tight. It's going to have some impacts. I think that Director Gibson got some good news, is that the Zone 3 cost for last fiscal year came under, and we were estimating that we would get a rebate of somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000 on that. So that money back from county on Zone 3 is going to cover most of the costs associated with this effort.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there any public comment on item 9A? Okay, seeing none, then I'll bring it back. Is anyone prepared to make a motion?
I make a motion. We continue the emergency. Is that the motion? We continue the emergency and...
Yeah, so the recommendation is to determine by a 4/5 vote that there is a need to continue with emergency actions.
Yeah, I so make that's the motion I make.
Second.
Okay, moving second. And can we get a roll call vote, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Opogon?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes.
And Madam President, before we leave the item, I just wanted to sort of alert everybody to we include the flyer, which we're also going to has been on the website and we'll use in some of our upcoming public outreach for reverse 911, right, and continue to encourage people to sign up for reverse 911.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to 9B, and that's to consider the recommendations to award the construction contract for the replacement generator to Mark Swind Electric. Direct the board to execute the construction contract in the amount of $51,820 and approve a budget adjustment, increasing the budget from $5,178 from public facilities reserves. Do you have a staff report?
President Aaron. Austin, members of the board, item 9B is the recommendation to award Mark Schwinn the lowest bidder of the emergency generator project, a contract of $51,820. On July 11th, we received six sealed bids, and a summary of that is on page 41 of 54. The lowest bid came in at $51,820 and only requires a $5,178 increase to the project budget that already exists in your budget for 1920. This something similar needs to be done for Well 8. This is just to cover the Sheriff's Building and the OCSD building and fire station. As Director Gibson notified in the PG&E outages, the generator that would be required to run Well 8 is much more expensive and is something we would want to pursue with grants. So something similar we'll need to do over there. But this is for Sheriff's Building here and over there at the fire station. And this project has been on the board's agenda, I believe, in 18 to go out to bid. And this is the summary of the bids. So with that, any questions, or if Mr. Ogren has any additional?
Well, I think, first off, let's address the specific recommendations, but there is some related discussions regarding the PG&E outages and the importance of emergency generators overall that I also want to make sure that we have an opportunity to discuss as a related item. But right now, yeah, all of the, got all the bids, everything looks pretty good. The only other, Ms. Cassiola had mentioned that the budget adjustment is going to come out of the public facilities fees reserves, which are restricted reserves, only usable for fire department purposes. It's going to those reserves are
261.
Yeah.
I think it's on.
It said will decrease to 209, but I think the budget adjustment is only for 5,000.
Because the original was 46, right?
Yeah.
So we had to increase it.
So it's still well funded. And the recommendation to have it come out of public facilities reserves is a standard recommendation. Whenever you can fund something out of a restricted reserve and therefore preserve your discretionary reserves to the greatest degree possible for any district need, then that's why we make the recommendation out of the restricted reserves. Staff report also mentions that due to the county's determination that the generator is part of a essential public facility, we have to have an inspector on the job, you know, at all times that the contractor is working. Our design engineer was anticipating to originally do the work. He has to look at the contractor's schedule to determine how many working hours. It's most likely within my purchase order authority, but that might also require a budget adjustment down the road a little bit for a relatively small dollar amount. The electrical engineer happens to be working in Southern California on a project right now, so I might have to find a replacement to do that inspection work. And because of the formalities of an essential public facility, I need to notify the county if we have a change in inspector. So we've got a little bit of work to do. Again, that will have a minor budget implication once we know those costs for the inspector.
I have been surprised at the amount of work that has had to go into this project. I mean, to me, it seemed like when it started, it would be a much simpler project. You get a bid, you get a generator, you put it on site. But soil testing and inspections and, I mean, it just seems like it's kind of excessive. And the county permits and fees to the county, we're both government agencies, and yeah. It just, but.
So Gary Wilson, who is our electrical engineer, I felt did the best job possible in terms of, you know, the little mini battle with the county. As an essential public facility, but it only being a generator, you know, it's not part of the structures themselves. He questioned their determination. They basically said, well, if they wanted to challenge, we could challenge it with the State Department of Architecture or the state architect, which, of course, would cost a lot more money than. But yeah. They did give us some leeway because as an essential public facility, You would typically have to do a full-blown geotechnical report. The county allowed earth systems to do an evaluation based on existing information with really limited field examination, and that saved us about $10,000.
I noticed that.
Yeah. And so Gary did a good job of, you know, representing the district on those particular issues. And part of it was, you know, a little bit of the frustration was, well, we know that the concrete pad's just going to get overbuilt. Any structural engineer is going to say, that's a 12-inch thick pad with a whole bunch of rebar. We don't really need to study the geotechnical anymore. And, of course, that's what the conclusion was that came through in design. But the county was being abundantly cautious. They did give us some latitude that saved us about $10,000 in geotechnical evaluations. But in terms of the inspection and stuff, they're maintaining the idea that we have to have an inspector as the contractor is doing the work. So, you know, the idea is that this project excluded the emergency generator to turn on well number 8. And the big deal with turning on a well is the horsepowers of large engines like that have the instantaneous demand on the generator. And so as part of the preliminary efforts, Gary Wilson had gone through and done an analysis for your board of the different options. And the bottom line is the conclusion was to simply buy a separate generator at the appropriate time for well number 8. Those generators often come on wheels. So we will be doing what's called pigtailing, which is to set up well number 8. It's relatively inexpensive so that it has a receptacle to be able to take in a temporary generator. And then, of course, with PG&E's plans to reduce their risks of wildfires and or fires caused by their facilities, and on a statewide basis indicating that they might be shutting off power for as much as, you know, 5 to 7 days, and the county indicating they can only keep water flowing out of Lopez for up to 5 days, part of the message that we're getting on emergency power overall is that communities are simply going to have to have everything set up for themselves. As a result, our ability to rely on renting a generator for well number 8 is going to decrease, because every other community is going to be in the same situation as we are if PG&E shuts down, or when PG&E shuts down the power. So again, the generator for well 8 was excluded from this project, but given the change in PG&E's practices, the best approach that we think we'll be bringing back to the board is to seek financing for a generator for well number 8. They cost roughly $125,000. They're expensive pieces of equipment. Installation costs really aren't there because they're going to be on it's on a trailer. Therefore, the district would have latitude of moving it to different locations if needed. But given the district's overall budget, the only way that we could fiscally see approaching that is with some sort of a financing package. So that's what we're going to look at. We're really concerned, you know, about PG&E's plans on these long-term blackouts. Our general understanding is that it's PG&E's response to the liability that they've been that they're looking at associated with some of the wildland fires that occurred up in Northern California. We're also general understanding that PG&E is working with other state officials to try to reduce their exposure to liability. So it's a little bit hard to judge if this is gamesmanship or what on behalf of PG&E. But in any case, all the water districts that we've been talking to are taking it very seriously, and we do need to move on seeking the generator for well number 8 as well.
Ask PG&E for a grant.
Carrie did identify what we think might be a grant opportunity with the State Water Board, and so we'll be pursuing that as well.
And I understood today that our governor signed something in the Central Valley, like he was in Tulare or something to ensure more water supplies to disadvantaged communities, another multi-million. I don't know if you know anything about it. I don't. I just heard it on the news in passing.
Yeah, I had not heard.
It was he was over in one of the San Joaquin Valley cities that has water challenges?
These outages, because of fire danger, they think if they stop.
Yeah, so as my general understanding is, and I can't remember which fire it was in Northern California, but, you know, we had a huge one that devastated Santa Rosa.
Oh, I think it was Paradise, the one powered.
Yeah, I remember fire. Paradise Camp, and maybe a couple of the fire guys here might be able to remind us of which ones. But the idea was
car fire.
Car fire, and it was initiated because a transformer or something blew. And so PG&E has got a huge liability that they're looking at right now. And my understanding of their approach is that, okay, well, if we're going to face that liability, then we're going to have to shut off power in those high-risk
issues. Like high, windy, hot days.
Right, they're getting a lot of feedback, and then if you do that, you're creating other types of health and safety risks, right? So if it's on, there's a risk that they have. If they turn it off, they're essentially transferring those risks to us.
Yeah.
Right, because they're saying, well, you know, if there's a health and safety risk associated with the water system, then you need to make sure you have backup power. And that's sort of what we're looking. One of the things that we have to recognize is that it's important for us to have backup power anyhow.
Right.
So it's sort of re-emphasizing something that we should be doing. And that's part of, you know, the feedback or what I'm hearing amongst other, you know, water staff of water agencies. And it's just the idea that you could have a blackout for 3 days or 5 days or 7 days is a little bit of new shock in terms of the kind of risks that we're doing. And it's pushing the issue of making sure that, you know, we've got the generators that are necessary. With respect to state water, we were informed that state water could stop flowing because they don't have backup power at all of the lift stations. Lopez is in good shape for 5 days, 3 to 5 days. But beyond that, the county is saying we can't provide you much guarantees right now. So whether the county is then going to turn around and start looking at, or DWR, you know, backup power at the different lift stations is another question. But right now, the message is communities have got to make sure they cover their emergencies on their own.
Okay.
And so the emergency generator project is obviously doing that for the fire station and the sheriff's substation. And then because we excluded that the emergency generator for well number 8 from this project, we're going to have to pick up efforts to cover well number 8. And Tony, can you speak real quick to your backup power at the yard for wells 4 and 6?
Currently, wells 4 and 6 do not have backup power, but we do have natural gas boosters to support our system from the two tanks that we have, the 1 million gallon and 300,000. But the two wells do not have backup power. Ideally, well 8 would be the one you'd back up power just because it pumps to system, provides system pressure for fire protection and for the community.
So the one portable generator we have is...
That is designed for the booster stations and or the lift station. So if we do have to go to the lift station, we do rely on natural gas booster.
And then my recollection of our discussion then is that if we have a portable generator that's sufficient for well number 8, if well 8 is down, we can take that generator over and power up 4 and 6.
Oh, absolutely, just because of the horsepower to the motors at 4 and 6. They're both rated at 40 horsepower, and like well 8's 125 horsepower.
That's part of the concept of making sure the well 8 generator is portable.
Question. Did we buy the jetter on time? I was trying to remember if the jetter was purchased on time or if it was purchased with a block. Because you were talking about maybe funding this on a time payment plan kind of thing. And I just wondered if the jetter, I can't remember whether we bought it or it was timed out in payments.
That was 2012.
I'm guessing it was paid with cash.
I believe it was bought outright at 120. 30,000 roughly.
Yeah. I was just trying to think of other major pieces of
That we financed.
Stock.
Yeah, so the new utility truck.
The dump truck.
The dump truck, yeah, got financed. But we don't have financing on very many pieces of equipment. In fact, we don't have debt on very much stuff right now.
Sounds good. Thank you.
I had a question. I noticed there's quite a range of bids among the six bidders. Is the lowest bid the only criteria we use in the selection of the contractor?
No, it's not the only criteria, and it's very much prescribed by the Public Contracts Code. It's the lowest responsible, responsive bidder. And so responsible bidder is, there's a number of forms that they have to fill out, like anti-collusion forms and other things. And they have to be a licensed contractor. They have to be registered with DIR, the Director of Industrial Relations. And so there's a checklist to make sure that they're responsible. Responsive is the issue of, have they responded to our bid package? Are they, for example, if there's an addendum to the bid, they have to indicate that they've read the addendum and that they've signed it. If they haven't, then they're not responsive to our bid. So, again, responsible is, are they duly licensed? Have they committed any collusions? Have they violated things? We can eliminate them if they're not responsible. And then if they don't, if they're non-responsive to our bid package, we can eliminate them. But it's a really, tight conditions under which we would eliminate. It's a high bar for us to eliminate somebody. We really have to be able to demonstrate that they're either not responsible or non-responsive.
Good.
Good point. So part of the process also is that we publish the bid protest procedures, and other contractors who have been on the job have the right to come in and say that contractor is either not responsible or non-responsive. So it's not just the district's review. We do our review, but other contractors can challenge the low bidder as well.
Good, I like that.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Did we have a public comment yet?
No.
Okay, so is there any public comment on this item, on the awarding the contract for the generator? Seeing none?
Yeah. I would like to make a motion. We award the construction contract for the 2019 replacement generator project to Mark Schwind Electric Company, direct the board president to execute the construction contract in the amount of $51,820 and approve a budget adjustment increasing the project budget $5,178 from public facilities reserves.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Can you do a roll call, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Pogel?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes.
And also, before we leave this particular item, the issue of responsiveness is still a little bit open. Now that your board has awarded the contract, the contractor has 10 days in order to submit performance bonds, payment bonds, and insurance requirements. And if 10 days lapse and the contractor doesn't do so, then we'll come back to your board with the next lowest bidder. And basically what happens is the insurance companies who issue the performance and payment bonds will only do so once they know that the contract has been awarded. And so we'll be notifying Schwinn that your board approved it today, and we fully anticipate that those three requirements will be submitted in the 10 days. We'll have a pre-construction meeting, issue a notice to proceed, and then we'll be on moving on with the project.
Okay. Move on to item 9C. Review a draft comparison of fire departments in San Luis Obispo County, unincorporated communities operated under the jurisdiction of independent special districts discuss community options for fire and emergency medical services and provide direction to staff as deemed appropriate. So, Mr. Ogden, you want?
Yes, Madam President, members of the board and public. So, what you have attached here is a draft comparison of five fire departments in the unincorporated areas of San Luis Obispo County, specifically those departments that are under the jurisdiction of independent special districts. And your board, this is prepared based on your board direction from the last meeting, where we did a more general review of the county fire department, the county fire strategic report that was published, and we talked about what types of additional details your board would like to consider. And so the first one I indicated I would put together this particular comparison. Next step is then to look at fire departments outside of San Luis Obispo County to see if there are any comparable to Oceano, with part of the idea being is if the special tax doesn't pass, are there any fire departments out there that operate in a manner that might be, a good approach for Oceano. This comparison shows that there are no fire departments in San Luis Obispo County that would be a model that we could follow if the special tax doesn't pass. Los Osos and Cambria have significant more funding, and as a result of significant more funding, they have, better staffed fire departments than what we could anticipate if we were on our own. San Miguel and Santa Margarita are very small and have very limited revenues, and are based almost essentially reliant on reserves or paid call firefighters, and that's not a good analogy. Templeton is the one that has the closest funding to us, both in terms of total property taxes, but Templeton allocates a greater percentage of their property taxes to non-fire-related purposes, and essentially they're not a 24/7 fire department. They have lower staffing levels. They are pursuing a special tax that is going to be voted on through an independent ballot measure in August. My understanding of their proposed special tax is it's a $15 a month or $180 a year, which I guess coincidentally is pretty close to the dollar amounts that we're estimating as well for Oceano. So we'll be following them. But again, that's a fire department that doesn't operate 24/7 and has some limited staffing.
Is there a plan to do 24/7 if this passes?
I don't know. So I can look into that. What I did is that I put in some general findings or some summary of findings, which are simply based on, looking at the numbers in a way. And why I'm starting to put findings in your package is not to adopt them right now, but to get board feedback. Because between now and October, and the October deadline is for your board to call for the election, it's good for your board to establish findings at the point in time that you call for the election. And so it's starting to develop now. We're finally in that phase where we're starting to develop findings and documentation. But in some ways, the ones that I put in there are, kind of obvious based on the analysis, I guess. And what I was hoping to do today was, in the graphics side of this, where I show some of the statistics, is that are there any in there that your board finds particularly compelling? And in the analysis, the one that really jumped out to me was the comparison of the calls versus the population. So that's on page 52 of 54 of the agenda package. The prior sheet shows calls versus coverage area. And what that particular graph shows is that for our geographical area, we've kind of got a low, below average number of calls. But that's because we have a small geographical area. That the number of calls per in comparison to our geographical area is high, and that makes sense because we have a small geographical. I don't know that statistic is particularly compelling to me one way or another, but it's on the one on page 52 of 54, and I ended up talking with Chief Lieberman to confirm this as well. But the number of calls per capita in Oceano is 70% of the average of these five communities. in Cambria, the numbers are like 150% of the average. And to me, that's important. And the real question is it compelling to your board? But when we look at Oceano and the number of calls per capita being as low as it is, so the number is like 0.07 as a statistic. Arroyo Grande is about 0.11, and I think Grover is like at about 0.09. But with Oceano being so below average in terms of the calls per capita, what does that mean for the future? Well, I wouldn't anticipate that the calls per capita is going to go down when it's already so low. And what I think you have to anticipate is that the calls per capita over time is going to go up. Now, why is it so low today? Hard to say. Is it demographics? Is it because in comparison to Cambria, Oceano has much quicker access to a hospital? So maybe people in Cambria, they might be demographically older. Cambria is generally considered to be an older population. Further away from a hospital, they might have a greater reliance on, you know, 911 and calling the fire department. But the reasons for the differences, to me, are hard to, you know, really analyze. It's the fact that the calls per capita for Oceano are so low that over time, you would expect that number to go up. And over time, then, the need for a fire department that's a fully staffed and, you know, professional fire department like Five Cities Fire Authority, it's important today. It's going to be important even more so in the future. So the idea that, you know, if the district is in a position, special tax doesn't pass, and we fall back on the old way of operations prior to 2010, when the district was struggling then, what are we going to possibly do in the future, especially if trends are for an increase in the calls per capita? So out of this whole analysis, to me, that's the most compelling statistic that I see, is the low number of calls per capita. And over time, you know, the trends, you would think that that's going to move closer to the average, and that the community is going to be more reliant, you know, on a full-service fire department and not less reliant on a full-service fire department. But with that, I'm glad to sort of entertain more discussions and dialogue.
Just some of these, are these graphs based on just the calls that Five Cities Fire responds to in Oceano?
Just the calls just for Oceano itself. Yes.
So it doesn't consider the calls outside.
Right. And it's the calls to Oceano. Most of them come from this station. You know, a few will come from Grover or maybe even Arroyo Grande.
Yeah.
So I've seen population numbers for Oceano of 7,000-something. So where did the 4,000-something number come from?
Let's see. The population number shouldn't be...
Like on page 52, it shows between 4 and 5,000.
Well, I've got to double check that, right? Because the population numbers are really running about 7,500. I have a second Y scale on that. Oh, no, that's right. So the orange bar is the number of calls, and that's the legend on the left side. So we have something that is 500 plus approaching 600 calls.
Yeah.
The blue... Oh, okay. Diamond.
I was looking at the
it's the right
bar
scale,
not the diamond.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I had to use two different Y scales in order to get them to work. So the number is about 7,500.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I almost panicked there.
Sorry.
So you want us to, on this, you want us to provide staff direction on the public outreach? Is that what?
Well, the idea is I don't need, you know, any formal direction or anything, but as we move forward and I start developing, you know, both sort of the general findings, but also findings that are specific to concerns that your board has, right? Because your board has the ability to take a position on why you would either support or oppose a particular measure. And at such time that you take a position, we want to be able to build the record as to what compels your board to do so. Now, we have a JPA amendment with Five Cities Fire Authority that basically says you have to hold the special tax in March of 2020 if you want to start staying in Five Cities Fire Authority. My general belief is that that message of thou shalt do it in a JPA document is not compelling to a community, right? What is compelling to the community, and what do you think as a board is compelling on why it's important to consider to stay in a Five Cities Fire Authority? And in this comparison to the other communities in the county, which is just one, you know, view of what's going on, this number of calls per capita is really low. And the concern is that as that moves up over time, the community's reliance on, you know, a professional fire department is going to increase.
So I
that's
think,
only one of many factors right. that might weigh in on the public and deciding how they want to vote. But that's the one thing that really jumped out at me in this comparison.
We've talked before about the divestiture.
Yes.
And that's, I think we really need to have all those points out as to what exactly that means with the, if we would go to the county, CAL FIRE come in. We've talked about it before on, you know, the county would be, do what they want.
Yes.
We don't tell them what we'd like. They tell us this
yes.
is the way it is.
So the issue of divestiture, though, is separate from this comparison to the other local fire departments.
Uh-huh.
But a good point. So from the board direction at the last meeting, I was directed to develop a letter for your signature to send to the county that asks the question,
right.
what's your expectation with respect to the fire department and the sheriff's substation? I have drafted that letter. I just need to get it finished up and have you execute it to send to the county. So that's a not, you know, this issue of what are the details of divestiture, you know, is separate from this comparison
so
to the other fire departments in our counties.
I think the mate, what you said earlier, the calls per capita is what we really need to get that out there, that we are below average, but it's got to go up.
Yeah, we have to plan for the future.
We were struggling in 2010. That's why we, you know, the Five Cities Fire Authority was formed, and so I think we need to have a good, strong fire department. We can't go backwards, so we need to, I guess, stress that, you know, you might hear people say, oh, well, let's just start our own. Well, we have to kind of explain how hard that would be and what kind of service we would get and why it makes sense to...
Maybe it would be good to remind people of that history, like what it was before the Five Cities Fire Authority.
And so when Carrie and I were working, Carrie has 37 questions that she's picked out of board discussions. And then what we did yesterday is we started putting those into different categories. And one of the categories was background and history. So we can add that to why did the district enter into the Five Cities Fire Authority in 2010? As one of the FAQs. Is it already there? Yep.
Looking at the chart on page 52 and page 54, the fact that our call ratio is also low. And I wonder if some of this is actually still... You know, the calls versus population and the call ratio being low, if that doesn't correlate to some of our population still not knowing they can call 911. I wonder if there's still a level of unsophistication that people don't always know where to go for help. Maybe they throw somebody in a car and race to the hospital instead of calling. Or maybe they have a fear of calling, their fear of government links to that. And I wonder if these two things show that.
Well, you know, it could be. It's always hard to look at something like this and then to know what the underlying reasons are.
And we have a younger population.
You know, there's a little bit of instinct that there's going to be some level of understanding, and then there's going to be a little bit of speculation. It's really hard to nail it down. I think the idea, though, is that those factors taken together is why we can expect if people... don't understand that they can call 911 as people gain a better understanding, then the 911 calls are going to go up.
But, I mean, these things show that. And we also, having a younger, certainly younger than a Roy Grandy.
If we have a younger population, then the idea is, as the population ages, we're going to expect numbers to go up.
Yeah. They just seem like they kind of go to, maybe they kind of go together. Maybe I'm wrong.
Right. It doesn't surprise me that Cambria has a high percentage of per capita call and Oceano has a low percentage of per capita calls.
Well, and I could, some cultural things, certain economic levels, if they have a toothache, call, and other economic levels suffer through. I'm being prejudiced in a reverse way. But.
And we might find that as the dialogue on Five Cities Fire and this special tax issue picks up with the community, that itself might trigger more calls.
Yeah.
You know, if the special tax passes, people might say, I'm paying, so now I'm going to call.
Yeah. And we do have medical, you know, I don't know how, if CHC gets people, I mean, they can walk into there, for instance. It's right in the middle, in a good location in town. And through the CHC program, they get some of the people that in other communities like Cambria might call the paramedics because they don't have a close location.
So they do have a clinic in Cambria.
Oh, they do? Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll shut up then.
Yeah. I think it's just the access to the hospital is what's much more distant.
Yeah.
So what I've heard so far is, you know, as paraphrasing, struggling in 2010, need a plan for the future and need reliable
fire department. Need a good, strong fire department. And I think that's how to stress it would be to stay with Five Cities Fire Department, get the service that we're...
I struggle a little bit with good, strong, because what does good, strong mean? You know, reliable, we want...
Reliable,
yeah.
Or...
Reliable and efficient.
Efficient.
Another thing, I don't know whether we've issued, and it's not here, so maybe I should just shut up, but we have special hazards in Oceano that just we walk by every day. That maybe because of my old age history, I have memories of the time the chemicals started leaking at the Oceano Ice Company. It wasn't a pretty picture.
So
I'm just saying that we have some specific hazards in Oceano that really require the fast response of a fire department and a good fire department and an efficient fire department.
Okay, a little bit separate from what we're looking at on the
I know, I said
today,
it, I valid, just thought about it, so I brought it
because,
up.
The local hazard mitigation plan that was recently approved identifies those special hazards. So in terms of upcoming community discussions and other findings, we can certainly come back and talk to your board about what does the local hazard mitigation plan identify as the special hazards in Oceano. And certainly, I guess it's chlorine that the ice company uses in terms of creation of ice and making sure it's pure and everything else like that. And I've been through emergency drills, as has Steve Lieberman when he was with the county, where we simulated a break and a gas plume in, you know, going through Oceano. And, you know, that's a known special hazard that exists here.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody even knows it's there.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of hidden.
Yeah. So I saw Carrie taking a note on...
If people know, ask people to identify the hazards.
Yeah, and we can come back and specifically talk about the LHMP and what's been identified in there.
Yeah.
And the as a future agenda item.
Okay.
One question on Templeton. Are they doing a polling or survey?
I'll reach out to Jeff. I'm not sure what the details are that they've been doing.
Just curious. Any other questions? Are you going to still wrapping up things?
Interesting work.
Yeah, so I've got some notes on board's statements and everything that, you know, we can use in follow-up. And, again, we're going to have more agenda items, and part of it is really prepping for the October meeting. and making sure we have good sets of findings and then, you know, specific statements about concerns or, you know, compelling reasons that the board's identified.
Is there any public comment on this item?
I just want to know, none of this is related to emergencies on the beach, correct? That's CAL FIRE, that's right. Separate?
That's correct.
Okay. I think, I was wondering if one of the questions that you mentioned, you're compiling a list, if that is no, if you could address that so that property owners know that they're not voting to
pay
for that, right? That it's just for us who live here and how important that is. And
super good point.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm getting older. Mary Oceano, you know, there's a couple things that are going that should be on the ballot and the initiative, and I would throw this out to staff to maybe look at a couple of the other things. Is you know, we have to, in order to sell water on a long term basis, our you know, spare, I shouldn't use the word spare, but, you know, excess water that, you know, maybe possibly we could straighten out that legislative, you know, that ballot initiative at that time, where the residents, you know, if we have additional resources of water that we have the ability that this board could sell that water. And then there was one other thing. Oh, yeah, that sewer thing, too. We can get that off the tax rolls, I think that would help people want to, you know, psychologically put their money back into fire. But I think we should put everything we have towards the fire.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, seeing none. This is just a...
Yes. So feedback.
We're all through, then that's... So I've lost my spot here.
We're done.
Just lost my agenda. Okay, so that brings us to hearing items. Are there any hearing items? Written communications? Late written communications.
So the late received written communications we've covered through some of the dialogue on the PG&E.
Anything on the future agenda items?
So I sort of just, you know, obviously continuing to work with the Five Cities Fire Authority and the special tax is important. I'm going to follow up with Jeremy at the Sanitation District to talk about that. Where I know that I'm going to be focusing energy in the near future is working with staff and everybody to get the North Swing Pershing project out to bid. Because we've got, the county currently is planning on asphalt work around December. It's going to be a part of a much bigger project, so they can, you know, work their contractor schedule to give us a little bit more time if needed. But we really got to get that out to bid so that we can get that project completed by the end of the year.
I don't think it's leaking anymore. I think it fixed it. So.
I think Tony might have had to go out there and do some work. But and then we talked about some of the other work efforts already. But again, most immediately, it's going to be trying to get that project out to bid, continuing with the discussions with Five Cities Fire, and then, you know, other ones that we commented already on tonight.
Okay. Is there anything anybody on the board wants to? Okay, then we have a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion. We adjourn.
Second.
Favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming.
Thank you, everyone.